Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get on to the next section, today's talks. I fear you may get rather bored of me by the end of today. I'm sorry about it, it's just me. There's about four or five talks. There's this one, I'll just give you a quick overview of the agenda. That initial one was the introduction. There's this one around design. Then there's one I talk about HTML, HTML CSS. I talk about XAML and C#. And then I do a lap around all the different areas of design for Metro. And that one will certainly be this afternoon. And then finally, I finish off with an overview of the store. Go ahead.
Does the Windows Store available on the
web? It is today, yes. That demo I showed in the store?
It's on the web?
Yeah. It's up there now. Oh, sorry, you mean it's accessible from the web, right? Well, I don't know. Not tried. I've only ever done it from Windows.
Website, I can go on and see the Windows Store.
I don't know the answer to that, I'm afraid. I've only done it from Metro itself. I haven't actually tried to access. I understand what you're saying. I don't know the answer to that. I can check later on. Okay, so this one is around designing the application. Now, I'm not a designer. This is what our designers inside Microsoft have told me that is how you should go about designing these things. How many designers are there here, as a matter of interest? Okay, all right. Okay, so we have this idea of traits of a Metro application, right? These are the things that your application should do, should look like. Metro style design using our topography and block sizes, fast and fluid, talked about that already, snap and scale, contracts, this is just a review of one of the slides earlier, great tile, connected, Roam, and Metro principles. Let's have a look into the design side of things itself. So the first principle behind Metro style design is content before Chrome. We feel it's really important we get away from large amounts of Chrome around the screen. So navigation bars around the outside, so on and so forth. We want to get rid of those. We want to minimize those so we have as much content as possible. This is particularly important as we get down onto the smaller screen sizes, because if you have a whole bunch of navigation bars on a screen this size, you end up with not being able to see any data at all, right? So the whole idea of getting as maximum amount of data, maximizing the data, so that your eye isn't taken away from the information that you're trying to present. Okay, so when we did a number of surveys, one of the things about Windows, it being so prevalent throughout the world, nobody changes anything on Windows without doing a huge number of surveys first. And marketing surveys, I personally don't always believe in the marketing surveys, but I sometimes think you're better off not doing them, but we will certainly test everything many, many times before we do it. And in one of the tests we did, we asked people to draw windows. This is what they drew. This is windows to the average user, like a whole load of bars and buttons and minimize and maximize and application buttons and so on and so forth. So that's what they think of in terms of windows, right? When we asked them, we showed them Metro, and we asked them to draw what they thought of Windows was in Metro, what Metro is, this is what they drew. And rather than all the navigation stuff, now they're just drawing the applications, the content, not the Chrome. They're just drawing, and that's really what we want. We want them, people to think about the applications, we want to bring the applications forwards, your applications. We want people to see those, we want people to engage with those, we want people to use those, right, all the time. So this is one of the key things behind where we're going with Metro, to minimize the clutter on the screen, get the maximum amount of effect so people actually understand what they're seeing. Content before Chrome, okay? Always bring the content up and don't use extraneous navigation information on the screen. Don't put lines and bars and dividers in. It's actually also very difficult. When you're trying to support a large number of screen sizes, if you have lines and grids on the screen, and you find that they don't sort of work very well on a particular screen size or a particular format. This is one of the problems we have. I mean, it's pretty easy if you're just supporting, 10-inch tablet, okay, and everybody knows what that is. But we support a huge range of tablets. We support a huge range of of form factors and of resolutions. And if your user experience changes every time you change resolution or have a different machine, that's not a very good experience. So if you can get rid of the lines, then it will improve the user experience. Minimize distraction, and as I say, traditionally you put Chrome around for three things: layout, interactions, and navigation. I'm going to talk about how you can do those things without adding buttons. Okay, so first of all, let's look at layout. Okay, in terms of layout, you want to not use lines, give space around the content. Again, don't try and take the content right up to the edge of the box. Don't butt content up against one another. If you can leave the spaces between the content, then that allows people to focus on the content and they navigate through those blocks of text. That's what it says in the next line. Look at that. Okay, so you put the whole idea of boxes and lines, take that away and just leave black space or white space around your application or around the parts inside your application. So we look at a typical RSS reader type application. Here's one. And you can see that up on the top there, you know, you've got your search, and you've got settings and so on and so forth. And then on the left-hand side, you've got your navigation and your navigation pane. And then you've got some sub-navigation in terms of your feeds. And of course, those have to have some settings as well. And then you put some boxes around. And this is actually the end of the content that you get. You end up with a tiny, tiny piece of content at the bottom of the screen. I mean, most of the screen is now navigation or controls or so on and so forth. That's fine if you've got a massive desktop display. But if you're on a small laptop, especially with bad eyes like mine, then, you know, you're sort of going like this to see what it is you're trying to look at. So we really need to get away from this model. This is a desktop model of showing things. And it doesn't work very well on smaller screen form factors, and it doesn't work very well for people with bad eyes like I have. Okay, so what can we do? Well, the very first thing we can do is we can just get rid of the lines and the boxes. And straight away, that actually frees things up. Just taking the lines out actually makes the application feel as though there's more space around it. It begins to feel more usable. And we've done nothing except take the lines off. And by the way, as I say, lines are a killer when you start supporting multiple different screen resolutions.
Can you go back to the previous slide?
See? Just take the lines off, the boxes out. Okay? So the next thing you can do is, right, if you look at this, pretty well everything is the same font. So it's like, which is the most important bit? Is it this, or is it this, or is it this? Now, what are we trying to see here? Well, we can use fonts. We use the different size of fonts in order to give ideas of what's important and what's not important. Okay? So you can use typography. It gives you an idea of the structure, what's more important, what's not more important. This is actually very simple stuff. It's the same as in Word, you know? Except I must admit the fonts in Word don't work for me very well. But you know, it's exactly what you have in Word when you pull up different levels of header. It's exactly the same sort of thing. Use, you know, different sizes, different weights, different colors, and so on and so forth. And we provide sets of style sheets to do these things. Okay, so, you know, these are the sort of fonts you should be using. This is what we recommend. This is in our style guide, 42-point for headers and subheaders and so on and so forth. Okay, so if we take that previous application and we just use the fonts to say what's important and try and use some navigation, this is what we get straight away. We get this sort of layout now. And now we're beginning to see a lot more of the content. And you can see that, you know, we're using the fonts to say what are the major parts and what the fonts are for the smaller parts and so on and so forth. Makes it a lot more interesting and attractive to look at and a lot less confusing. And then we can take it and we can reformat it. Now we've got rid of so much space, we can actually take it, reformat it. And with Windows, with Metro, because a lot of the control side of things we can take off and put on the charms bar, then we actually get that space back in as well, right? Okay, so in terms of layout, hello? Right, we'll come to navigation in a minute. Yes, I understand. And I'll talk about navigation in a minute and how we see navigation working. So I'm still talking about the layout, but I know what you're saying because we took the navigation bar off. And I
made more room, but there's less navigation.
Exactly. And I'll come back to navigation in a minute. So let's do the layout and then we'll talk about navigation. So the idea here is you just let the content flow edge to edge. The other thing is that you only pan on a single axis. So, you know, if you're in portrait mode, you pan along. If you're landscape, you go the other way, and so on and so forth. It's important that you just pan, you don't pan in both axes, so people get the idea of the flow of the application, right? As it says in the bottom there. Okay, so you've seen the panning anyway, so I'll skip over that. So then you can actually then just take each of those headings and subtext just the images with some text underneath, and that then provides a really nice look of your into your application. This becomes something that looks very attractive, very easy to see, very easy on the eye, and so on and so forth. So I'll talk about this in more detail. Okay. So this, we call this the Metro style silhouette, and actually it comes as a template, right? So let me just go and flip through to the template in Visual Studio, and you can see exactly how it works. Okay, so in Visual Studio, we provide a set of templates for Metro, and they actually implement this for you, right? So you don't have to do all the work with the design. The actual templates come as part of Visual Studio. So this is a file new, and you can see that under JavaScript and Visual Basic and all the rest, each of them have standard Metro-style applications. And in particular, let's do JavaScript. We have a blank application, which is the one you saw me use for the Hello Worlds, and this is a grid application, which is actually the same as the one you saw earlier. And what that does is it will go and create exactly the same, the look and feel that that we saw in that previous example. And all you then have to do is go and populate that with your data.
What about the size of the screen? Do you have to be aware of
it? Yeah, well, to a certain extent, yes. Some of them, the sort of templates take care of a lot of that. And you can actually say, okay, this particular template will work on these particular form factors. You can actually say what screen resolution. There's also a simulator which allows you to go and have a look on different resolutions, which I'll share in the next talk, in fact. Okay, so we take a lot of control. We take a lot of the effort out of doing different resolutions and form factors, screen form factors. However, there's always going to be a case when you have to think about it yourself as a designer. Yeah? Okay, so, and if we just run this, straightforward blank application. Okay. Okay, so this is exactly the same format as I was talking about before. Now you can just go and put your own information in here, your own data in here. Obviously you can scroll backwards and forwards with it. Yeah, so we provide all that scroll functionality, that sort of thing. And you can click on one of these boxes and it then takes you to the next level down. This is just big Latin in here. And you, as I say, you can build an application very, very quickly just by putting the data in underneath these templates. It's actually it's pretty well trivial with the templates to go and build an application very, very quick. There's actually a demonstration lab, and I'll just show that if I may. So there's this, I'll be showing this throughout the day. This is a thing called Contoso, which is an application we built. This is using exactly the same templates, you can see, but all I've done is I've just got some data which I've populated those fields with. So I've got some image data and some text data, and I've just put them into these. And you can click on one of these, and you can see exactly the same navigation. It goes down to some... It's cutting off a lot. Okay. It is actually cutting off a lot on my screen as well. It goes down to that next level down in the hierarchy, and I want to talk a lot more about navigation in a moment. But again, to actually build this takes about half an hour. To give you an idea, to build something like this, or build something like an RSS reader with this sort of look and feel, literally, with the templates, takes about half an hour. There's a very good demonstration, which I really wanted to do, but again, you just don't have time to get all working. It was done actually at the Build conference. The last session of the first day of the Build conference was actually around the tools, and a friend of mine called Kieran Mockford, who we used to work with me a long, long time in Microsoft, and I recommended that he went from the field, he worked in the UK, and that he should go to corporate, and he went to corporate, and of course has done extremely well. In fact, he's now senior to me, which always seems to happen. But he actually built this fantastic application where he just said, hey, you know what, I'm interested in retro computers, so I'm just going to do a Bing search, and I'm going to build it, and I'm going to put up this sort of type application off the back of a Bing search against my particular interest area. And it took, you can see it takes him, he does it there on the screen, it takes him about 5 minutes to build an application like this around his particular area of interest. Yeah, and they say, I wish I could have done it, but what I'd like to do is, and as we go along and do more of these talks, I'm hoping I'll get around to building it, is to be able to say to you guys, what is it you're interested in? Tell me something, and then just do the search and actually build an application around that, because it's that quick. It's amazing. Anyway. So back to the layout. The templates are already there. So this shows you the same sort of thing as I was showing with Contoso and the templates. Get the headline, get the content, and then be able to slide backwards and forwards across the content. And there are certain areas in the screen that are important and that you have to manage, in particular the top left-hand side, which is the back button. You need to make sure that there is a back button for navigation. People understand what a back button does. So you'll see in the templates, there's normally a back button in the templates. And you can then say, okay, here's a set of different examples, actually built with the same templates, pretty much, to do that sort of functionality I was showing earlier. So these are some of the applications that are actually in the demonstration applications. Again, it shows the back button. This is actually a slide of the of one of the other grids. One of the other templates. This is the grid template. Again, showing the back buttons. All right, so that's the first side of things, which is, okay, what does the layout look like? How do we make the thing look nice? And how do we give it the right feel? The second thing is, okay, so how do we interact with that? I took a lot of stuff off. I'm not very comfortable with those slides, to be honest, because as the lady pointed out, as I went down, I took a whole load of stuff off, and I just sort of ignored that, which is my prerogative as the presenter. Except somebody called me out on it. So I really need to go and pull that stuff back, because at the end of the day, you actually do need those control buttons, you do need the navigation, and so on and so forth. So first of all, you need a whole load of control things, like search and stuff like that. So, and the idea here is that if they're standard things like search, like share, they should go in the charms, right? So rather than have your own search button, you use the charms bar, and you search for the charms bar. And that's really nice, because that means that the search in the charms actually doesn't only search in across the web, for instance, but it also searches into particular applications. That's what it says about the charms. And then the second thing is, you have your own app bar at the bottom. And so you should have the app bar that comes up, and you should populate your app bar with the things that you need for your particular application. So if you need to do a synchronization, a typical one, okay, you need to have somewhere where you put the sync button. That should go in the app bar, and then when you slide the app bar up from the bottom, then the synchronization will come up. Okay, so here we have, as I say, going back and putting some of the control things in. We have search, we have settings, and so on and so forth. The settings and the search go on the right. Things like synchronization go on the bottom, right? Let me go through. Here we are. So that's the previous application, and this is it with using the application bar down at the bottom to add feeds, do synchronization, and refresh. So that's how you go about doing that. And the same for the charms, right? So you have the search, and if you want to do specific things with devices, you can have that in there. You also can put things in the settings for your particular application. So if you have if you want to add new RSS feeds, you probably have a bottom for that. But there are certain times when you want to do particular settings for your application, and you can again do that through the settings button. Okay, as I said, you can use the app bar at the bottom, and one at the bottom is for commanding things. Now, little caveat here, right? You'll go and have a look at, I hope you will go and have a look at the applications that are out there, both ours and other people's that are up in the store today. They're very much beta applications. So the customer preview is pretty good, it's pretty solid. The applications that you download, not so much. They're very, as I say, very beta applications, and some of them are very robust. Actually, in general, to be honest, the ones that are done by ISVs are quite robust. Some of the ones we've done, not so much robust, right? So don't judge Windows by what you see in those applications. And in particular, don't judge how you should do the app bar and things like that by those applications, because I personally find them very confusing. So what the guidance we're giving, and I'm not saying that our applications meet that guidance, is that basically, you know, this all becomes navigation at the bottom, top bar is immersive views, back button and so on and so forth. And then what you try and do is obviously you keep the things that you need most, keep out the outside, right? And then it says global commands on the right and contextual commands on the left. So you know, if it's got something that you always want to do, like you know, like pins or something else, or sync and so on and so forth, then you do that over on the right hand side, and then things that are specific particular context is over on the left. As I say, it's easy to say, it's quite a lot more difficult to actually do, and if you go and have a look at our applications, you can see we don't always get it right. That's a good question. It doesn't really make any difference. But you shouldn't. I understand the text is flipped. I'm not sure. Does it matter where you have?
Mostly signs are flipped too.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Oftentimes the signs are on the left in English, okay. On the right in English, they'll be on the left.
Right, I didn't know that. It's up to you and your application, so you can design it either way around.
The way your eye moves, because your navigation is going to be on the right side as well.
True. Absolutely right. Yes. So, yes, you would actually flip that.
So, the buttons are going to be different.
So, yes, thank you very much. That's a piece of advice that I will take back. Yeah, if you're reading the other way around.
The navigation part will be on the right.
Is that right?
Instead of on the left.
Okay. I didn't know that. So, yeah. No, in that case, you're right. You want to flip. For Hebrew applications, you want to flip the whole screen. Good point. Okay, so you can also have these things called flyouts, and flyouts are things that flip up. So you want to give some particular information, right? You know, a warning, you want to get some particular information, you do that with this flyout, and the idea is it comes up as close as possible to where the person is actually working, right? So, you know, if you want to collect information, there's a little pop-up that comes up just underneath where the person's got to in that document i.e. don't make the eye move huge amounts to fill in particular information in, right? Again, with the errors, make them in line. So again, you put up a flyout or a pop-up when you have an error, and it's actually in line with the text itself. Okay, so that gives you an idea of how you do the control and the commands. I want to talk a little bit about navigation. I have my own opinions about navigation, so I'll tell you what the company line is, and then I'll come back on navigation. So, you saw earlier we had a navigation bar, right? The idea in Metro is that you don't have a navigation bar, and you navigate by this hub and spoke method. So you actually have a central point, and then you go out from that central point, okay? Which works well for hierarchies, okay? Unfortunately, it doesn't do huge hierarchies, obviously, because you lose track of where you are in a huge hierarchy. Say avoid the persistent navigation like tabs, and semantic zoom gives you an idea of what the idea with semantic zoom. You do that, it gives you an idea of where you are in the particular application. So let me just give you my opinion about navigation. Right. So actually, navigation there's three sorts of dimensions you want to navigate over. There's a linear dimension, one dimensional. Where basically, and you do that through the scan. When you do this backwards and forwards or up and down, that's how you scan through a list, a single dimensional list. And that works well, we all understand that. The next most common one is a tree view. You know, again, the navigation pane you saw earlier is actually a tree view. And this is this what we're talking about with this hub and spoke method is actually a tree view, effectively. They are actually, both of those are subsets of more general case, which is actually a mesh. The most common, or the most generic, is a mesh navigation where everything's connected to everything else. Of course, the problem with meshes is it's really, you get very complex very quickly, and it's very difficult to navigate through them, which is why we take either one-dimensional, two-dimensional views into the mesh, which is the full space. Okay, so the navigation system you use really is what I'm saying. You have to use the one that's appropriate to the audience or to the people who are using that are using that navigation system, and it are also appropriate to the information that you're presenting. Metro applications are really meant to be targeted for consumer applications, okay? And consumer applications generally don't have very deep, they don't have very complex meshes. They typically don't have very deep levels of nesting either in terms of hierarchy. So the hub and spoke method goes down two or three levels, and I'll show you that in a minute. And really that's probably enough for the sort of applications that we're sort of thinking about with Metro. Now, if you want to go and if you're building a system that's doing process control of some sort, or that's going through a huge raft of information inside an enterprise, then these views probably won't work very well, and you may have to come up with some other method of doing that, especially if you have something like a complex mesh topology in terms of navigation. So, as I say, the key thing is that the system you use should be appropriate for the audience and for what you're trying to say. And we believe that for the vast majority of cases, this is the best way of doing it. There's a really good book about, it was written probably 100 years ago now, about people living somebody who's used to a three-dimensional universe living in a two-dimensional universe. And it's really interesting, you read the book, it's really interesting about how they can navigate in a two-dimensional universe as a three-dimensional person. I recommend, if you're interested in navigation, I recommend you go and read it. It's a novel. It's quite funny. Actually, I think I'll probably get it on my machine.
It's called Flatland.
Thank you. Flatland. But it gives you an idea of... Oh, yeah. It is indeed Flatland. And it's a very old book. And as I say, it gives you an interesting concept about dimensions and navigation through dimensions. That's not really part of the talk. Okay, so this is the hub and spoke. So this is a terminated hierarchical view, and the idea here is you have the top-level hub, you have spokes that come out from that, and then they have details that come out from that. So this is like a tree structure. And we feel that the vast majority of, let's say, consumer-type applications, this is the right sort of depth, because obviously you have the ability to scroll backwards and forwards across these as well. And what we can also provide is we can provide the ability to navigate through these using semantic zoom as well. Okay. So, you know, if you do a semantic zoom, what it'll actually do is it shrinks down that top level so you can see all the things in the top level. Okay, and I'll just quickly show that. Okay, so this is the Contoso application I showed you earlier. This is a resistive screen and not very good, I'm afraid. I should have left my other computer going. Okay, so that's the semantic, the zoomed in version, right? So that all zoomed out. What it's done is it's taken each of those details and it's put up, the information from each of those areas, and it can then add in additional information like the number of particular dishes there are, and then of course you can zoom back out again as well. Okay.
Like for the enterprise, they should try to find them, but you should have your own guidelines.
or the beta system as well, something.
I know if I had
50 products inside one of these.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, I agree, and we do need to do that. Yes. You know, it's a good point. We need to provide additional information, in particular for enterprise. We're rolling out more and more of the enterprise story as we go along. So this actually just says what I said a moment ago. Lisa. You should always scroll in the plane, right? In semantic zoom, you can zoom down, you can scroll across. If you have a large number of them, you can still pan like that in the semantic zoom.
If you take the previous example with the French and Italian,
right?
You just have a really short preview of all. If you want to make an impression of how much the content is important. How would you do it?
You can change what you show at that semantic zoom level. So you can, as I showed, you can put different data up there. Okay? So you can change what's shown. I think I might show that in a moment, right? So semantic zoom, zoomed out view to show the meta information of your model. You can enable operations on the group. So you can label a group, you can change the labels on the group, I showed that. And the scope of the content should stay the same. Okay, so for instance, this is the expanded expanded view of the produce, and what you can do is you can shrink it and you can add additional information. Okay. Fast and fluid. We've already said that applications need to be fast and fluid. First thing is animations. When you go in and out of particular pages, when you click on things, there should be you should animate, and the animations should make sense. So the typical animation that I'm talking about is a very simple one, which is this. Okay, so when you get to the end, if you look, it bounces, yeah. So when you're scrolling, it should bounce because that bounce tells people that you've got to the end. Okay. Similarly, when you open something, there should be a very small, not a huge massive flyout. You know, don't use the PowerPoint thing where things zoom in from everywhere, right? Because that's just confusing. But there should be a small flip to show that something's opened. If you look at the Contoso demo, you'll see when I go from one page to another that actually it doesn't just come out up bang, it just flips itself open slightly. So wherever possible, you should use these animations. Now, the good thing is that we provide most of those for you, so when you use our built-in controls, it automatically provides those sort of animations, those physics types animations. So as I say, when you're actually using our libraries, you get the correct sort of effects, animation effects from the animation itself. So yeah, it comes back to, we've all seen the PowerPoint hell where things fly in and out all over the place. Don't do that. Just do it so it gives people information about what's going on in the application. Touch first. I talked a little bit about this. It's important to remember that Metro is really about supporting tablets and touch. We do support both mouse and keyboard as well. So all our controls actually support all three. So if you design and build something for touch, and you program for touch, then you automatically get all the other mechanisms as well if you use our controls. However, you should think about designing for touch, and in particular a very set number of touch gestures, which mean specific things. So, and we've listed them here. You know, they're pretty obvious. You tap, it means open, right? You know, you slide to drag it backwards and forwards, you pinch to open and shut and zoom, you rotate to rotate, you swipe down to select, and this is where you see the animations too. If you noticed earlier on, like when I was selecting things, I went down like that And you can see there's just a slight drag as it comes down, which means that you've actually selected that particular animation. Select from the edge to get to the charms bar and the applications bar. And this is another thing, is that today's machines are not designed particularly well for this. So, for instance, this machine has quite a thick bezel around the outside, which means it's really, really hard to get to the charms bar from it. This machine doesn't have, a more modern machine like this one, doesn't have a bezel, so you don't have any problem getting to the edges. And you'll see that, like, the tablets coming out in the future will be much smoother than what was done in the past. So again, if you're using an old laptop like this one, this is a three-year-old laptop now, and you have trouble getting to the charms, it's because the design machine itself was not really designed for Windows 8. Clearly, as we go forward, there'll be a huge number of machines coming out supporting Windows 8. They will have a much better feel to the screen. They'll be much more responsive on the screen as well. The hardware will be improved. One of the nice things about 8 is that we do have a huge number of OEMs, hardware manufacturers, who are very, very keen to build Windows 8 tablets. They see the success that other companies have had, and clearly would like to be out there as well with their tablets. So we're seeing a lot of people, in fact, to the point where we're seeing certain companies pre-announcing that they're shipping machines and so on and so forth. So we're going to see a huge number of different form factors, a huge number of price ranges and so on and so forth going forwards. So if you buy a machine today, you're certainly not going to be getting the same sort of machine that you'll be able to get towards the end of the year. So even a machine like this will look very old. Okay, so that gives you a quick idea of the different touch elements. What you find, as I say, is that you tend to change the way you work slightly, especially if you have a nice tablet like that one. I use touch almost exclusively on this. On this one, the touch is not very good, so I tend to use the mouse a lot. But you can actually use both, and you can certainly use the keyboards as well. The Windows button C is a very useful key for a start. Okay, this is the next one, is design with use, how people are going to use it in mind. When you actually hold a 10-inch tablet like this, you'll see that there's certain places you can get to with your thumbs pretty easily, and certain ones that you can't, right? So, and what we've done here is we've shown where average people can hit very easily with their thumbs on a screen. So take that into account and try and make sure that your anything you're trying to put up where people are going to actually want to touch fits in those spaces. So let me give you an example of something you shouldn't do, because it has been annoying me. Okay, this is the movie player that comes that comes as part of customer preview. I don't think I've got a movie in there. Hang on a minute. It doesn't matter. Okay, so when you play this. Okay, so you play, and that's in the right place. And what it does, when it actually goes and plays it, is it puts the play button right in the middle. And that's really annoying, because you can't reach it. So if you want to pause, you've got to take your finger off, right? So that's what I'm saying, is that don't necessarily look at our applications today as the best case. We do things that are perhaps not as sensible as they should be. But that one drives me. It's very irritating, but it gives you, so you can see straight away, if you actually use that application the whole of the time, you're doing this, whereas you should be able to do it on the edges. I think I talked about this. Obviously make things reversible, pan in the single action backwards and forwards, and design first of all for touch. Think about how people are going to use it in touch. Visual feedback on touch and touch up, touch down. So, okay. So snap and scale. I haven't showed snap because my machines don't support it, but make sure that you actually support the snap and the scale resolutions. Right? So, and generally what that means is when you go to a smaller scale, or when you're going vertically, or when you're going to a snap view, you realign your application so it's no longer horizontal, but it's vertical. That's pretty much how it works. So as I say, here's a number of different views into the same application. There's the minimum one, which is all I've been showing you today. There's a widescreen version of it, which obviously just shows more. And then this is snap, where you have two applications side by side. And you can see what happens here is that you then take one particular application and you put it in a vertical format. And this is portrait, where you turn the thing sideways. And again, that's the vertical format. And all this is supported for you in Visual Studio. It shows you the different resolutions and how your application is going to look in the different resolutions. It also helps you to be able to do the snap views. Clearly, you have to think a bit about your specific application and what that looks like. Built-in snap is built-in. And again, design it so that your snap state has the right view. I have to say, I find it difficult to come up with particularly good scenarios for snap views. I mean, I show the demonstration, but I'd be interested if anybody can come up with a particularly good scenario. I mean, typically what I show is on the left-hand side, perhaps something like Facebook, you know, and then perhaps I have my mail system in the middle. But I actually don't sort of feel that's a very good scenario. And you guys are all out there building applications. If you come up with interesting ways of using Snap, I'd be interested to see what they look like. I tend to always use full screen. Seems to be the way I work. Not obviously if I'm doing desktop type applications, but certainly when I'm at home or I'm reading a book or something, I don't often have something up on the other side. I tend, simply because of the screen size is a little bit small for me, but I guess that there are applications. I can't demo that because I haven't got a machine. We've talked a little bit about scaling. There will be a large number of different screen sizes, different resolutions, and you do need to scale to do that. We provide a simulator as part of Visual Studio, which allows you to go and see what your application is going to look like. I'll demonstrate that in the next section, actually. Couple of sections down. Simply because this machine is not very powerful, so when I put up the simulator, it runs rather slowly. The way it actually works is very clever. The simulator actually runs by bringing up itself. It actually remotes back into your own machine, so the machine is running like a separate instance of itself that then comes back up into the simulator inside Visual Studio. But clearly, you are then effectively running two UIs at the same time, and the machine slows down if it's not a very powerful machine like this one. I'll show it later on, but it is a useful way of seeing what Snap's going to look like. It's a useful way of looking to see what the different resolutions are going to look like. Contracts. I think this is an interesting and important idea, and that is that the ability to interact with other applications is very useful. You know, the ability to search through other applications obviously is useful, but also the ability for you to be able to have information in one application and pass that through into the other application. So let me give you a quick example of that. So say we're in our cookbook application, okay, and we've seen the Chinese salad or something like this, and we actually want to send that to somebody else. We can just click on share, and because this particular application has been enabled for sharing, it says, what do you want to share with? And this says, I want to share it with the mail application. That then automatically files up the mail application. Okay, and you can see it opens up mail. It takes the content that you've defined in your application and automatically puts it into the mail application, puts in the formatting that is applicable, and then you can actually send it straight out from the mail application without leaving the original application. So it's a very nice scenario. I'll show you the code for this. It's actually enabled a lot by the template, so there's very simple code to do this. I'll show it later on. it's the controls themselves do most of the work for you, and you can define which particular pieces of data you want to get shared across when you do it. So there's a sharing, both the sharing person who's the source and the sharing target as well. So both people have to understand that they're going to participate in the sharing before they do this. But a lot of applications, certainly mail application, things like that, will do that. Okay, so it says in here, it's a consistent model we will always support. Charms are always there, and the item template I showed earlier, it provides all those extensions as part of that template as well. I think I talked about this. Obviously, when you share, you have both share as a source, share as a target. You have to write in your code which ones you're going to support. And then say what particular data formats you are going to support as they go backwards and forwards. Search. You don't have to write search anymore. We provide search as part of the OS now. And you can search, obviously, out on Bing, on the web. You can search back into your application or in across a number of applications as well. Search should be a global across all your applications. Find tends to be things that are on the screen itself. So there's the differentiation between the two. But search, again, is very powerful. Let me just quickly show you search.
Is speech supported?
Sorry?
Is speech supported in search, like in Android?
There's no reason why you can't. Our templates don't support it out of the box, no. But yes, you'd have to write the code to do it. But the what I'm showing you here is basically a set of controls that are supported by our template, so you don't have to do any additional work. Can you go and write additional code on top of that to do speech search? Absolutely. Yeah. Tell me, for instance, does exactly that. My understanding is most of those voice recognizers all come from one company anyway, so you can then just actually you can take the speech, you can process it, you can do what's it called? You can actually check to see what the words are that come back through the cloud and then put it up. Yeah. Yeah, you can do all that stuff. But as I say, this is stuff that comes with for you out of the box. Yeah? So let me just do a quick search for you and I'll just show you what that looks like. So again, back in the Contoso application. Whoops, wrong one. Okay, so I can do a search in, let's go back up once I'm searching the whole application. And I can just go across here. As I said, it's not very easy to hit, there it is. Okay, so I can do a search, and I can now, you can see here, these are all the different things that I can search over. These are the different applications. I'm just gonna search on this particular one, and I'm just gonna type in salt. It does all the usual stuff of trying to determine what it is you're going to type and all those sort of things, IntelliSense type features, and then it will go and it will search through your particular application and return the information for that, for this result set for the search. You can then just go and click on that. Again, this is all provided for you by the controls. It's like two lines of code to actually do all this stuff, so it makes it very easy. Okay, and settings, we talked about the charms settings. Put all the application settings on the right-hand side in the settings bar. The top part of that bar is for your settings. The bottom piece is for the machine settings in general. It says there, you obviously want your basic info in there and other specific settings. Very important, actually, because it's where you end up tending to go. When you use it a lot, you go to the settings quite a lot because the machine settings are down there. So if you're in your application, you'll find people go to the settings quite a lot. Minimize the number of settings, but make sure that you can control the things you need to control in there. This is obviously the charms. This is the settings, and you can see here, you know, different sort of things that you can do in the settings. And you can have an account for your particular settings. You can have, you know, various slide outs and buttons to select things, whether you want to pay, what you wanted to do it on. These are sort of things you can put into the settings very easily. This is an important one, and that is get a good tile. We provide, when you build your application, it gets packaged up into an Apex, and as part of that, we ask for specific basic tile information on specific sizes. And to get something that looks exciting is the first step to getting people to use your application. You could see some of those tiles that you could see on my desktop. They look much more interesting, much more inviting than other ones, especially the basic ones. But you can go a lot further than just having the standard tile. You can put a whole load of other information in here. So this is a much bigger set of tiles. These are the sort of things you can use, and these actually come as part of the standard sets of templates. So you can use all these sort of tiles straight out of the box. They're supplied for you, and you can add additional things in. At the bottom, you can add additional information, about what's going on inside your application as well. You can of course animate your application. I showed you that, but you can also add lots of note information, update information. So this is sort of notification information, but not notification information that's urgent. So typically, if you've got a new email coming in and you've asked people to be notified of new emails, you can put up a flyout. I'll talk about those in a little while. And Windows will put the flyout up or for you automatically. But of course, if you don't notice it and go away, then the ability to have that flyout, that information on the actual front itself here, to say that there's new information for you to go and look at, means that people will understand that they need to go and look at your application without having to go and open it all the time. So as I say, it says most of that. This is the entry point into your application. You can build a secondary tile. So if somebody has something that they want, a particular thing they want in your application that they always want to go to, then they can very easily set it up as a tile in its own right, and you can then pin that to the command bar. So let me just show you that. Okay, so for instance, I really like Chinese salad. I don't, but let's say we really like Chinese salad. Then you can pin this, okay, here. And that brings up a little notification which allows me to type in that it's a Chinese salad. I can say pin it to the star. Clearly you would normally have an icon, a bit of a picture in there, a GIF of some sort. And now if I go back to my start bar, where's it gone? Sorry? Was it there? I missed it. Oh, it's this one. It's blank, I think. Is it? Yeah. So that reinforces my first point about it's important to have an icon that people will recognize rather than just a blank one, right? And you click on that and it takes you straight to that part of the recipe book. And then finally, you can actually animate the tiles themselves. So you can change the views in the tile. It will actually cycle through you automatically. So you can give it 5 updates, and Windows will automatically cycle through the last 5 updates for you. Again, make sure that the updates are something that's changing reasonably quickly. As it said there, but don't set things that are going to get outdated as part of the 5 cycle. And then both default content tiles, large and small, they all support this live functionality. And I think you saw some of that earlier on. Some of my tiles were updating as we went along. Next area I talked to you a little bit earlier is about the whole area of notifications. So you want to actually tell people when things are happening. And there's two sorts, There's things where you want people to notify people straight away. There's an SMS coming or something like that. Tell them straight away, but they, of course, can be away. So you then want to be able to update the tile so people know that the tile functionality has changed. So these are the sort of things you want for notifications. Transient messages outside the context of your application. Something's happened. You need to take attention. obviously you only use it for stuff that, where you need to tell the user something. And then those fly out, and then you then go and update the tower. And again, the controls all support that, and I'll show you how to actually program those later. Finally, run to the cloud. Make sure that you maintain your state, and you push your state out all the time. This is particularly important when you go into suspend. When you go into suspend the application, it's important that you actually back up your information at that point, because your application could be terminated. And so therefore you can lose information if you get terminated. So you have 5 milliseconds on suspend. You get told you're going into suspend state. You get 5 milliseconds to back up all your information. Most of it's backed up automatically by WinRT. And then it goes, once you've done that suspension, then any information gets roamed up into your live ID and it comes back down again, right? Obviously don't try and do it if you've got a, you know, if you've got a whole batch of photos or a couple of movies, then you're not going to get that done in time. This is just for small pieces of data. In general, for large pieces of data like user data, you know, you can use things like SkyDrive for that. And we're providing more and more support for Windows 8 in SkyDrive. And you'll see that going on. Finally, Metro principles. Make it look good. I mean, you know, make sure that the application looks good. Try and make the content look clean, good graphics in there. Try not to put boxes and time around it. Make sure it's fast. Authentically digital, this says, you know, don't try and copy things that are in the real world. You know, don't try and copy a texture, because unless you're trying to make a point with the texture, you know, because clearly it's a screen, it's not a specific texture. And then finally, you know, use everything else that's going on, all the other people's applications, and try and use those to provide additional functionality in your application as well. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of resources up there on how to design things for Metro style. How are we doing for time? 1:45. Got half an hour, is that right? We've got half an hour before lunch, is that right? Okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go into the HTML section of the talk. Just quickly. So this is a very quick run through the whole area of HTML and JavaScript. I talked earlier on about HTML and JavaScript being first class citizens. They really are. We're spending more and more time and effort in making sure that, you know, we are the best HTML engine, we are the best JavaScript engine. There's been a lot of work going on in IE, in IE 9 and now IE 10 to give the highest performance in terms of JavaScript. And you can build pretty well much anything you like. Now, there's two different things here. There's HTML and JavaScript for the web, and there's HTML and JavaScript to actually build applications. So I'm really going to be talking about building applications, using HTML and JavaScript to build applications rather than to build web pages. Although, to be honest, most of this information is exactly the same between the two. But you can clearly do a lot of this stuff on web pages, but some of it you can't necessarily, so I'll talk about that. So, you know, this is the platform slide I showed earlier. And this is the piece I'm going to be talking about now, HTML and JavaScript for Metro-style applications. Some of it obviously covers desktop applications as well. A lot of what we're doing in HTML and HTML5 is actually applicable for both. But this is really focuses on how you use web technologies to build Metro-style applications. It also, obviously, we also have to provide support through WinRT. For all the standard RT support functionality, you know, the application model I've talked about, communications and data, graphics media, devices and printing. So all those things have to be supported out of HTML as well. We run HTML so it will actually write directly to the hardware. So it's graphics accelerated. So we get really, really good performance from any HTML JavaScript code because it is, as I say, running straight to the hardware. So what are we doing in HTML? IE 9, now IE 10, it's IE 10 in Windows 8. These are the additional things we've put into IE 9 / IE 10 in terms of, you know, additional CSS, additional HTML5 functionality, and so on and so forth. again, this is really about providing additional functionality for Metro, right? Again, you can use it on the web. But what we found is that when you start to do touch in the browser, you actually need a whole load of additional pieces of function that aren't necessarily in the standard spec. So we've gone and added those things in, and we've obviously then resubmitted those to the standards body, to the web W3C, for ratification. Because, you know, obviously we want to have those things as standards, because as we get more and more touch applications out there, it's important that they all use the same standard way of doing things. So this gives you an idea of some of the things that we've put in order to support the additional functionality we need in WinRT. And this is the CSS things. I think if I remember rightly, the things that are are highlighted are the things that we specifically need for the Metro platform. Yeah. So some of these things are things that are just things that are needed in general, you know, CSS color. But then some of them, things like grids in particular. I've talked a lot about the support for grids and for lists, and we've put a lot of that support back into here. People who've got used to building lists and grids in our tools, you know, they find it's very difficult when you go on the web to build all that stuff in JavaScript, so it's really handy that we provide those as part of the standard platform. These are the five main areas that we've added CSS3 support in. So there's the transforms, the 2 and 3D transforms in CSS, motion and animations. I've talked a lot about animations. Already mentioned the layout, the grid and the flexbox, how we support the ability to have lists and grids. Graphics, obviously, how we support various graphics effects, and then how we provide the sort of content flow that we've been looking at earlier. And finally, of course, and this is important, is that we spend a lot of time in making sure both the HTML and the JavaScript runs as close as possible to the metal. So a lot of this stuff gets pushed straight down onto GPU and runs on the GPU. That's actually how this thing works so well. There was a trick. I didn't tell you the trick. There's always a trick. There was a trick how this thing works so well on such a low-power processor. It's actually got a really good GPU in it. The GPU in here is actually an AMR GPU, and that's why it was so responsive. Because Windows Metro was actually running straight to the hardware, and the GPU hardware, was very good. The main process is very poor, which is so it's good for things like, you know, reading books and things like that, where you're doing a lot of graphics work. If you're trying to do any processing on here, it really struggles. The two guys who were here earlier were struggling with it. They said, we're going to put MATLAB on here and really kill this machine. So as we go forward, you'll find that it's not just the processing power of the processor, but also the processing power of the GPU that you buy. It's going to make a big difference to the performance and the experience that you get. And people will soon begin to realize that when they have machines that don't perform so well. In general, most of the graphics processors in the sort of Intel space at the moment aren't that great, and they're getting a lot better. Obviously, Intel and everybody else are working very hard in improving the graphics performance of the chips that go into Intel-based hardware at the moment. But that particular one's got an AMR chipset in it, which comes from a gaming system, so that's why it's so quick. Okay, so let's just look at some CSS. Now this is actually using the browser straight off the web. Okay, so this is a number of different demonstrations there are for the IE10 HTML platform. we look at 3D. So this is a 3D piece of text here. And what you can do is you can actually on this side just go and change the particular format of the text. Okay. And this is all working, you know, this is standard HTML and JavaScript. In fact, there's no JavaScript in here to speak of. You can see down at the bottom here, this is the code for it. And this is all actually supported directly in the browser or directly in Windows 8. Gives you that sort of performance. So it certainly gives you a lot of performance ability. Go on to the next. Okay. We've also added a lot of things in PHTML5. A lot of innovations gone on here. Okay, so we've added things for the web. A whole lot of ability to access the web index DB. That's the main way of us being able to store information at the moment. ECMAScript 5 support we have in there as well. Geolocation, again, geolocation does not part of HTML5. We've had to add that in. Audio and video tags in there as well. We've got the main ones we've had to add are really around the whole area of touch. Pointer event, zoom, snap, all those things had to be added as well. And then, of course, forms as well. We know that people want to build forms. It can be done today in JavaScript. It's a lot of work. So we've actually put that in as part of the spec, and even things like spell checking. So the browser will actually spell check automatically for you. Okay, so let's go and have a look at some of those things. At the moment, they're Microsoft specific, but what we've done is we've submitted them back to the standards body. Everybody needs touch, right? I mean, you know, all the browsers need touch. Now, we're doing it for applications. I'm really only here talking about Metro applications. I'm not talking about the web. Right? In my opinion, the touch on the web is a whole different problem. Right? I mean, anybody who's tried to use web pages, you know, on a tablet knows the issues to do with resolution and trying to hit things and so on and so forth. So there's a lot bigger problem there with touch on the web anyway. But as the very most basic, you do need to be able to do a touch onto a browser page, and that has to be handled in some standard way. So what I'm talking about here is I'm talking about things that we've had to add in order to be able to do touch. I'm talking about them in terms of being able to build Metro applications rather than the fuller space of the web. Yeah. But we are resubmitting them to the W3C.
The utopic dream of HTML5 application, which is completely portable, is still far
ahead. You know, the trouble is that things change, right? It's like, how do you... I sort of like the idea of standards, providing things stay the same, but this is such a dynamic industry. What do you do about things like touch? I mean, it's a problem. I don't know what the answer is. You know, the HTML5, the spec has, considering how long it normally takes with the spec process, HTML5's come through very quickly. But even so, it's sort of lagging quite badly against where people want to be. Even in areas where there's been a lot of work, like video and stuff like that, you then get into the whole area of, you know, smooth streaming video and things like that. So, you know, all the time people want these additional functionality, we've got to work out how to do that, and then we've got to submit it to the standards body, and hopefully over time, I would love it if the standards body caught up, and you know, there was no more change, and all the browsers supported everything that was needed to be supported. I think it is a utopia, to be honest. Okay, so for instance, this is a very common sort of scenario. You want to put up a web page or an application which does form validation like this, and you know, you then want to submit the order, and of course you have to go through in the JavaScript and check for required fields. This is actually all done now as part of HTML5 in IE10. So you know, you just type in You type in the various information in here, and it will go through and validate it. You know, as you can see, that it's putting a pop-up to say it needs a valid field. And I'm not going to type all the information in, but by the time you get to the bottom, clearly it will actually then submit it. So this is the sort of stuff that people really need. To do this in JavaScript is possible. It's just a lot of work and rather messy. Whereas we've now put it up as part of the standard, it's part of HTML on our platform. So you can automatically do all this sort of thing. And as I say, it's mainly for building applications in rather than trying to put that up on the web. It is an issue if you try it on the web, obviously, because it won't work on other people's browsers. Okay, and I've talked a little bit, that's forms of validation. One of the other things you can do is you can, once you've got the touch in there, you can start to build some really nice touch applications where the machine itself recognizes touch. And this has just been put up as a set of particles. I'm doing this with my cursor, but I can do it with my finger as well. And this is all working inside the browser. It's all part of HTML5.
And what's the difference between touch and pointer
and they're the same in this instance, yeah. Yes. So we provide the touch API as part of the HTML5 spec. Okay. Sorry, I'm not quite sure I understood the question. Right.
You mean you add like pitch to zoom?
Yes. What we've added is what I was doing a minute ago. This is with my cursor, which, as you say,
multi-touch event.
That's right.
Single
touch. See, multi-touch. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll take your point. Okay, the final thing I want to talk very briefly about is the tools for this. So we've also updated Blend. Visual Studio Blend is now out in beta and downloadable. It comes as part of this preview, in fact. And what that does is it provides a much better way of doing UI design, particularly in HTML and XAML, right? So. Just fire up Blend. Oh, incidentally, whilst we're here, actually, I wasn't going to show you this, but you'll notice down the bottom here, there's actually a JavaScript console. This allows you to now inject JavaScript straight into your code as it's running, so you can set a breakpoint. I should have said yes on that earlier. So this allows you to actually be running JavaScript, let's say then go and actually write, set a breakpoint, go and actually write a piece of JavaScript in there for something additional that you forgot, and then go and continue to run with that JavaScript in there. It's not something I particularly like as an engineer, but it's useful functionality. This is really slow. I'll skip over that demonstration. Maybe I'll show it to you later. We've also provided this library, called WinJS. It provides a lot of the functionality that these control functionalities as part of the library itself. So let me just cover this quickly. Okay, so as we've provided the WinJS library, it actually provides a lot of the controls in JavaScript to do all the stuff I've been showing you earlier. So the controls, the common user experiences, for touch, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're all provided as part of this WinJS library, right? It allows you to build things using the controls very, very quickly, very easily. These are the areas that are provided as part of WinJS. A couple of things to call out. Data binding, a lot of the data binding controls are in there. It helps you a lot with that. Animations we talked about. And again, we have some animation information in there. The whole area of async and promises. Area of promises are part of that library as well. The application model and navigation. So all these controls are provided for you as part of WinJS. It means that you can build JavaScript applications very quickly and with all the Metro UI functionality built in. Finally, of course, you may want to run things like jQuery, your own libraries. Absolutely, you can go and use your own libraries. There's no reason why not. Obviously, it would be nice if you actually met the UI guidelines I've been talking about this morning. Understand how the sandboxing model works. There are a couple of instances where when you use jQuery to get out of our sandbox, you have to do a couple of things, which are covered in some of the tech notes. But it is certainly possible to use that inside our jQuery, for instance, inside our sandbox. And you can use both WinJS and jQuery and other libraries as well. And use whichever you want at the same time. Okay, so you know, basically, if you're a web programmer, then you already have most of the things you need to do to go and build Metro-style applications. And we provide basically a whole load of libraries and controls which help you do that very quickly and very easily. So I think that's about time for lunch. Yep, we're about there for lunch, I think. So thank you very much, and I'll see you again after lunch. Thank you.